now joined by an author. She's a new author. She was born near the Lithuanian border as a young girl, and she met Hitler. She supported her mother when the S6 repeatedly searched their home, and as a medical student, cared for some of the thousands of wounded soldiers returning from the Russian battlefields in cattle trucks. Well, part of her remarkable story is that alone she joined the refugee trek in the severe winter of 1944 to 1945. She fled over land and frozen lakes. She was chased and shot at by the Russian army. There was no food, no shelter, no warmth, only ice, wind, snow, and the dead bodies of the refugees fallen by the wayside. Well, this is a remarkable, a gripping story. Helga Gahardi has lived with the most horrific memories of her flight from the Russian army in the Second World War, never able to talk about her time as a refugee. But after years of gentle but persistent persuasion by her family, she has finally found the courage to confront her worst nightmares. And aided by her diaries, she has been able to recount the story of a Swiss family, that's her own family, trapped in Hitler's Germany, in her recently published autobiography, Helga. Helga, welcome. That is a quite remarkable story. Now, tell me a little bit about your family background. I've read your book over the weekend, and I must say I was really quite gripped by it. What was it like actually being a young girl growing up in wartime Germany?
Well, I think at the beginning wasn't too bad, but the more severe the war became, then it really started. I don't think we were ever concerned about what happened in the West so much, because living so far out in the East, we were more worried about the Russian armies. They came quite close in about 1944. The Germans started to lose the different battles because they hadn't got enough manpower. And when the winter started, I was studying medicine. University, of course, closed because there was no time anymore to go to university. And we all had to just start to work in the different hospitals or be on duty at the railway station.
Helga, did you ever qualify?
No.
That's one of the sadnesses, really.
Yes.
Although, put in perspective, perhaps the least of the sadnesses.
Well, I would have liked to qualify, but of course, being a refugee, we lost everything. Mm. And my parents, although we returned to Switzerland, my parents did not have the money to send me to university.
Now, tell me a little bit more about this spine-tingling meeting you had with the Führer. That was extraordinary.
Well, that was really more like an accident, I would say, because it wasn't planned and I had no appointment. I went to my piano lesson on a particular day, and when I came out, the roads were full with people because Hitler was expected. I wanted to cross the road because to get home, the trams weren't going, I had to go around side streets. A little flower seller was selling flowers, and I thought, well, my father had been away, he would come home for the weekend, so I picked up some flowers. Well, people wouldn't let me through, but somehow I squeezed through, and suddenly I ran into the road, not realizing that I shouldn't have gone into the road, because round the corner came some motorbikes, and then there was Hitler in the car standing up, and people were shouting and screaming. Well, I stood there absolutely petrified, wondering.
It was very frightening, wasn't it?
Yes.
The way you put in your book that the crowd were all screaming, Heil yes. Hitler, Heil Hitler.
Yes, yes.
I mean, impossible, really, for anybody to imagine, except that we've seen just that in so many films.
Yes, well, you can see it on newsreels, too, the way they scream so loud. And they did admire Hitler, and the children and the young people, they really did, because of the Hitler Youth. It was sort of drummed into them, actually, to love the Führer, and that Germany was going to be great, and everybody believed it. They really believed it. But anyway, I was trying to get off the road somehow, but one of the SS men jumped off the car, and thinking that because I had flowers in my hand, I wanted to give them to the Führer, he just guided me towards the Führer, and I must say my arm just automatically came up, and he took the flowers, and then he said to him, why aren't you in uniform? Because I didn't belong to the Hitler Youth. And I sort of said, well, I'm Swiss. But he never heard it because people were screaming so loud that, well, I'm sure he didn't take any notice. I don't even know whether he took much notice of me, because he was so pleased that everybody admired him. And the car just drove off, and I ran to the other side of the road and tried to get home quickly, all excited, to say, look, I've met the Führer. And he had cold blue eyes, and
Yes, the cold eyes that sort of bored into you.
Yes.
Compelling memory in that book. And of course, as the war went on, your family was completely scattered.
Yes, that was very unfortunate, because when the time came that I had to leave Königsberg, because we could already hear the rumbling of the guns, I was all on my own, and I didn't really know where to go or what to do, so I just joined one of the refugee treks, and we just marched. We just walked, because there was no train, there were no cars, and you just try to get further and further away from the Russians.
So you were fleeing the advancing Soviet armies?
Yes, that's
on foot,
right.
Across frozen lake, well, land, and that's an incredible journey of 350 miles.
Yes. Well, the lake is not really, it's a kind of a lake. It has an opening into towards the Baltic. It's called the Huff. And to cross that, we had to do it, because there's a small strip of land which is called the Nerung. We had to reach that because the Russians were already surrounding us. And that was, I think, actually the worst part to get across, because once the Russians started to shoot at us, the ice would break. And the tracks with the horses, well, they just disappeared.
Now, there was terrible illness, appalling hardship, but you saw the most horrendous acts of cruelty and violence. And your mother had, of course, given you this cyanide to use should you feel that you could bear no more.
Well, I wore that around my neck, actually, but I used to touch it from time to time, and it was like a talisman. I used to think, well, it's all right, but if they really get me, that's what I can do. But we somehow seemed to stumble forward. It was the cold that affected me much more than the hunger, because although we never were able to get food for long periods, and we even had to eat the bark of the tree, it was the cold. And even today, when I talk about it and think about it, I still feel cold.
Shiver runs through you.
Yes, I never want to be cold again in my life. We had 10, 15 degrees below zero. On the other hand, if it hadn't been like that, we wouldn't have been able to cross the Huff, because it wouldn't have been frozen. So maybe we should have been grateful it was as cold as that, because otherwise I think the Russians would have got us. We also went through parts where the Russians had been, because the German army had pushed them back. And those memories, they're the ones I can still not talk about, but I did write about it in the book.
You're obviously very moved talking about it now. I find that touching to look at you, and obviously you remember it so clearly now. Now, people are going to have to read your book to learn most of it, and as I say, I picked it up on Saturday and couldn't put it down until I'd finished it. I think one of the most touching parts of the book is after you've been through this terrible refugee trek and you'd suffered so much, but the most touching part was when you were reunited with your father.
Oh yes, that was a miracle. That was an absolute miracle. We had in Hamburg is the Red Cross station where you could go and put your name down if you were looking for relatives or friends. And I had already found my mother by then, but I left her behind on the farm because it was difficult to get into the town. We had no transport. I got to Hamburg and gradually found this Red Cross place, but people were queuing up there. Oh, it was such a long queue. They even slept there at night because, well, otherwise you would miss your turn. And I was walking along this row of people to the end because I couldn't squeeze in anywhere else, when I saw an old man sitting there, and he touched my dress and he said, I had a daughter like, she looked like you. I always think I visualize her again. You look just like her. Well, it was my father. And it's an absolute miracle to have found him just sitting there amongst the other people.
You didn't recognize him?
No.
Not at first?
No. No, he looked awful. He looked awful. He didn't recognize me either, because I didn't look all that well either. But anyway, we didn't talk for a long time. We just sort of only just kept on staring at one another. And then once we started, I always said, how did you get here? And he kept on saying, how did you get here? And that's all we kept on saying. But
it was fate, complete fate.
Yes, Well, I always think it was a miracle. I found him through a kind of miracle.
Now, the years have gone by since all this, and obviously the end of the war was not easy for you and your family, and in the book you talk about the years of poverty, the almost ceaseless journeying and travelling it seemed you had to do, and you lived in this wooden shack and really had very little food or warmth. But eventually you came to this country, you married, you've got a family, you've been a teacher over here. Really, you've been English.
Oh, yes. Well, I lived longer in England than any
Absolutely.
Other country, yes.
And yet you carried within you this terrible, nightmarish upbringing. It was something you could never talk about. But finally, you've committed it to an autobiography. Now, talking to you just now, I can see that even now you are quite overwhelmed with it all. What was it like writing the actual autobiography when all these memories came flooding back?
Well, I think the beginning wasn't too bad, but the moment I came to the part where I was a refugee, I made all sorts of excuses why I couldn't write. I've always had something else to do. But once I started, I went through it all again, and like I said before, when I came to the part where it was so terribly cold, I was just cold again. And at times I even cried. But I did get it down on the paper because I felt also that people ought to know what it was like in the East, because I think in England people are more concerned about the Normandy landings and what happened in the West. But the East was just as important. And think of it, what all happens today in Bosnia, we get the repetition of it again. Please don't ever have a war again.
Helga Gerhardi, thank you very much indeed for joining me here this afternoon.